Welcome back, everyone, after a somewhat prolonged hiatus.
So it's been like months.
Months and months long. Our summer vacation, our podcast of one's own vacation.
A vacation of one's own. We like to take our vacations in winter.
Yeah, just at random. Yeah. And for time that is far longer than a vacation should be. But we're back now, and we're going to do a sort of ramshackle episode recapping all the things we remember having seen and having thoughts about over the last several months. So, blanket spoilers for the last 6 months of media, 3 months of media.
Like 4 or 5 months.
There's 4 or 5 months of everything that came out is now open for just rampant spoilers.
I feel like we're only going to talk about the past, like, month, though, because we've forgotten what has happened.
Oh, yeah, the things that we wrote a list out, and except for Girls, all of it just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll mention on this, on the site.
Yeah. Spoilers. Yeah, we'll tell you.
As they come.
Yeah, yeah. We already did all the good ones from, like, Boardwalk Empire and all that, so, really.
Boardwalk Empire.
But to start out, as we all know, Arrested Development's 4th season recently came out on Netflix. I watched all of it twice.
I watched none of it. Hey, I'm Kara. This is Kate. We've forgotten how to introduce ourselves. It's been a really long time.
And we're doing an extra cozy episode today without Skye.
Oh yeah, Skye died.
She's dead to us. She's
no,
not
just
dead
kidding.
To us.
She's not here today.
So instead you'll get two overlapping voices for the next hour. Talking first of all about Arrested Development, because our Living as a Feminist question of the week is in relation to a thing that has been on a lot of, websites and articles, about the distraction caused in the latest season of Arrested Development, not by the weirdness of the plot or the structure or any of the lacking of intimacy, but in fact, how weird Portia de Rossi's new face looks. And so, for all of you out there wondering, we have the answer to the question, can plastic surgery be feminist?
That's a really good question, Kate.
It's a good feminist question of the week.
Yeah, and I do wish Skye was here, because I think it was about a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit more. It doesn't matter, but a while ago, Skye and I had a literal fight about this question.
And because of the scrappiness, you both had to get reconstructive surgery on your faces.
No, because I'm against it, and Skye, at the time, was for it, and I hope she doesn't listen to this, because I don't want to paraphrase her wrong, and I think she's also changed her mind about it, because she was very much like, you can't tell a woman what to do with their body. If they want to get plastic surgery and get their tits really big and, you know, look the exact like a Barbie and look exactly anti-feminist,
like,
that's fine.
For her, it's more about the matter of, like, choice and control than about the, like, subscribing to outdated physical norms.
Exactly. And I was kind of like, we're putting our body through mutilation to look a certain way. To look for an ideal that we don't even think should be an ideal.
Right.
Really. Like, we want to open up the definitions of beauty. So, I don't know, I'm not hard and fast against it, and of course plastic surgery isn't always, like, plastic surgery by choice. You know, sometimes you get in an accident and you need plastic surgery, and I'm clearly not against that. You know, I'm not meaning anything about that.
But the idea of elective enhancing...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I as much as I don't want to be so, like, tell other people, or be so, what am I looking for here? Divisive about it.
Decisive?
Yeah. I don't know what I'm saying.
Black and white?
Yeah, like, I don't want to say something is totally wrong, but I do think that it isn't great.
Yeah.
And I think also because it's mostly women that are getting the same kind of procedures. It's not like we're getting procedures to look really different from one another and be unique, but we're getting the exact same procedures to look more like something that doesn't really exist in reality.
Right, so like the idea of some sort of standard that exists, which includes like the thin nose and the perky tits and the flat stomach and the small thighs and the huge ass.
Yeah.
Which is, a physical norm that cannot exist without alteration, and also, like, we must say exists because of a, like, patriarchal view of women and a patriarchal and unrealistic.
Yeah, and it is kind of, like, I'm scared about it because it's becoming more and more common, and so it becomes another part of upkeep as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to put on your makeup already, and you have to look cute every time you're outdoors, and now you're gonna have to get plastic surgery.
Yeah, like, it's an extension of, like, putting on lipstick is now when you're 45, you get Botox. Rhinoplasty or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And, as much as the argument, that Skye had previously of, like, if you are going to be happy, or if you really think you're just doing it for yourself, like, you know, I'm not getting fake tits because men want it. I'm doing it because it'll make me happier. Like, that, to me, doesn't exist. Like, no choice is made in a vacuum.
Right.
The only reason that we want big tits or if we want a smaller nose is because society is influencing us that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no choice, really. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the feminist rhetoric of choice. Not that that's a very feminist thing. It's kind of a pop culture understanding of feminism, mm-hmm. which is just, like, about choice. But, yeah, I think Skye kind of went back on her thoughts about plastic surgery because we kind of learned about neoliberalism, to bring it back to neoliberalism, and that kind of choice of women having to work on their bodies
mm-hmm.
and sculpting it through plastic surgery is extremely neoliberalist.
I guess the analogy I would want to draw just for the devil's advocacy's sake.
Oh yeah, please do.
Is the idea that, like, you and I both wear makeup and that's, like, a way to enhance parts of us and reshape our faces. And it isn't mutilation, it's not permanent, but the idea that we do physically alter our appearance on a daily basis in order to subscribe to a norm, this is just an extension of that writ large. And I'm not sure if I necessarily don't think that wearing makeup is a feminist thing or an anti-feminist thing. I don't know where my perspective is on that.
Yeah.
But I feel like that the idea of dressing a certain way or putting on makeup to look a certain way that is different from how we look naturally falls into the same category. And as an extension of that, when I think about, like, how I dress why I dress the way I dress or why I wear makeup, it is sort of an idea of making my exterior more aligned with something that makes me feel good about myself. So, like, I don't have blemishes and therefore I can act a different way in public because I'm not mentally focused on my imperfections.
And it is kind of, where does that feeling of feeling good about yourself come from?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're gonna put on makeup and sit around the house
mm-hmm.
and that's gonna make you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna hide blemishes and go out to feel better about yourself. And that feeling better of yourself doesn't really come from within. Not that it has to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're allowed to and should have feelings of being happy from other things outside of you.
Mm.
But it's always important to remember that, like, it's not coming from...
Of course.
And in terms of makeup, I think that that's a really interesting thing. And I think about that all the time because I wear makeup. I don't think women should have to.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, it is becoming more and more like, you don't look professional in the workplace if you're not wearing makeup.
Oh, I work at a place right now where it's part of their policy that the women have to wear makeup.
Yeah.
Which makes me want to die, and I hate it, and it makes me want to yell at the owners. But also, on another hand, like, I would never not anyway.
Exactly.
So it's not like it directly affects my life.
Yeah.
Because, like, I work retail, and if I don't look a certain way, people don't take me seriously.
Yeah.
As seriously as you take someone who sells you shoes, exactly. Which is very.
So, I mean, that's kind of brutal. But I mean, there is this whole argument that makeup and fashion, is that the bigger understanding of it, is more for female pleasure, mm-hmm. And a female eye or a female gaze or aesthetic or whatever you want to call it, because people who are really hardcore into fashion are doing it for other women,
mm-hmm.
And doing it for, or gay men.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's not like fashion people are putting on crazy makeup to impress guys. I feel like I put on makeup to impress the women that I'm around. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to wear a cool color of lipstick, so I can look trendy with my female friends.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for looking sexy to guys.
And I also know that I have, like, personally, unbidden, and just because I'm, like, a terrible person and part of the problem, when I see someone who is not wearing makeup, I occasionally am like, oh, that person looks tired. They could use some blush. And
totally. Maybe
knowing that I have that internal monologue, I assume it upon other people and don't want them to have it on me.
Yeah, and imagine that plus plastic surgery.
Exactly.
but when you have to literally cut open your body and take weeks of, like, repairing it, I think is brutal.
I want to pitch, I guess, I don't know, it's a not a fully formed thought, but do you think that in the way that fashion and makeup can be a method of self-expression, like, do you think that there are people that believe that of plastic surgery as well?
Yeah, I think most people who undergo plastic surgery
mm-hmm.
Are doing it. But I think that there are creative ways to do it. I mean, something that is a little 90s reference, but the people who were, like, super into vampire culture back before it was Twilight mm-hmm. culture, or...
And Rice culture, man.
Yeah, just weird that, I don't know the name for it, but that weird kind of punkish 90s thing where you'd, like, maybe split your tongue open and have it, like, serpent-like, or get implants to be elves. I don't know, these are all, like, very nerdy examples. I meant ear implants to be elves. I don't know.
No, you get full body elf implants.
Yeah.
Shin lengthening and immortality.
Yeah, and those things, I think, are obviously doing a counterculture
mm-hmm.
rather than making them into the norm.
So
I'm not discounting plastic surgery altogether.
Just plastic surgery that is subscribing to, like, the larger values of feminine. So I guess what we're saying is, essentially, that plastic surgery can be feminist as long as it's tongue-splitting.
Yeah.
As long as it's kind of weird.
Yeah, and I forget the performance artist names. I think it's Nina Arsenault, do you know of it? And she has, I think, oh my god, I'm so sorry if I'm, like, misremembering this in this
Miss
person.
Miss Arsenault, we know you're listening.
Yeah, but it might be a different person, but I think that's her, of, reconstructed their body, they're trans, and they reconstructed their body to be a Barbie doll, and so, like, constantly undergoing plastic surgery and having a live feed of plastic surgery and kind of making the body into a site of it's performance art. So it's done in an interesting, critical way of it, by still making yourself into a Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's interesting.
So there are ways to do
for
everything.
For me to totally remember everything about that.
No, but the idea of, even there's a way to subscribe to the norm physically without subscribing to the norm psychically or mentally.
Yes.
Totally. Very interesting. That said, I also do think that Lindsay's face, Portia de Rossi's face, got more normal, like, and I'm not sure if it's because I got more used to it, or it was just a weird thing about her haircut in the first two episodes.
I cannot weigh in, because I haven't watched Arrested Development
mm-hmm.
this new season. I've watched the other ones, but I only saw a photo of it, and she looked weird in that photo, and it's a photo, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Also, we're unsure, at least my understanding is, we don't actually know if she got plastic surgery.
No, it might be a thing where the show's narrative, like, the character got plastic surgery and the show's narrative doesn't comment on it, because that's just the nature of the show to have things yeah. like that as backstory, which actually I would kind of love.
Right.
If you just have a long hiatus and the character comes back with work done, because that character would.
Yeah.
That would be awesome if that's a thing they did. I would love that, narratively.
Yeah. But it... Yeah, so I don't know what to say yeah. about Arrested Development.
I mean, my summary of it would be that the characters... Like, I think that the original series, like, Lindsay and Maybe were both interesting, well-rounded characters that stood on their own, in the sense that they had problems, and...
Yeah, I mean, Lindsay was always interesting because she's playing off the total archetype of L.A. woman,
mm-hmm.
Or that kind of woman, which is pretty much all of the terrible characteristics of women that are applied to women.
Yeah, what I liked about Lindsay's character, though, is she was not portrayed as, like, desirable or heroic for any of these. Like all the characters in the show, they were viewed... as kind of terrible, and their traits were not positive traits,
yeah.
and, like, the flightiness of her and her, like, dedication to causes for these short terms were all viewed as, like, very vapid.
Yeah.
But I think that portraying a character in that way as vapid was done in a way that wasn't because of a fundamental misunderstanding of people or of females. Like, I think it was more just, like, I don't know, I think it was more of a comment, and I think that, like, Maybe is a very interesting character who, like, does have ambitions and does have goals and achieves them, and in that way, I don't know, I don't think that it's, like, they're feminist role models, but I think that they're rounded characters. And that's, yeah. that stays in the new series.
Yeah, it's in terms of Lindsay, of course, like, the whole shtick is that all of the adults on the show are kind of awful.
Yeah, they're all yeah. in a state of Arrested Development.
Yes.
Well, they're all children. Yeah,
yeah but it is kind of interesting that Lindsay's way of being awful are all the typical feminine ways of being mm-hmm. awful, which is being vapid, like you said,
mm-hmm.
Instead of having something else, or an unloving mother, or an unwarm mother, mm-hmm. like Lucille.
Mm-hmm.
But, whatever.
What other shows do you want to talk about?
What's next on the list? The Girls.
Well, we can do it quick. What do you think of the second season of Girls?
I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. After, I forget what episode it was, but after that, I was just, like, cried every single episode. I thought it was funny, and, I want to talk quickly about the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want, or do you have any, what do you think about it?
I like things about it, and there are things I didn't like. I liked the first season more, overall. But... the ending is interesting. What did you think? Because for me, the ending actually fell more aligned with, like, Judd Apatow's sensibilities than Lena Dunham's sensibilities, in that it was, like, a very romantic comedy ending. Like,
yeah,
it was
really
typical. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was awesome because, for me, I read it as a commentary of that kind of ending. Mm-hmm. Of, like, you know, you get the little, what Lena, Hannah was writing, I forget what it was exactly, because it was months ago, but, you know, a friendship between two women is, like, the most dramatic thing in the world, or whatever she was writing, and you see the characters, like Marnie and Hannah, all pair up. They both pair up with other guys to come save the day, and, like, there's really amazing romantic music, and it's totally that ending, but to me, it speaks more to that's what is expected of the future,
mm-hmm.
is to, you know, pair off with men when you can't have your girlfriends. Like, you're growing up, and you're growing into those specific,
yeah, and your friendships ways. Are replaced by...
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Your close, young college friendships are replaced with, like, adult relationships with men. So I read it as, like, a very sad or bittersweet or ironic ending, rather than, like, the actual romantic
ending. What made you find it bittersweet? Because for me, it looked straight up romantic in terms of, like, Hannah's perspective.
Yeah.
Like, we had him running in the streets, and we had the romantic music, and then we had fun playing on the credits, of course.
But think of, like, he didn't really do anything. He didn't save her. Or do anything. She still had all of the problems that she had before.
Mm-hmm.
She still has this, like, book thing to finish in a day. And I think it's mostly from... And Marnie, like, she was going through a really terrible time this season and, like, felt very lost. And the only thing that she knew was to be dating what's-its-face.
Yeah, to, like, get very, very back together with Charlie.
Exactly. And to, oh, Charlie. And so that's it. Instead of, like, working more at finding what she wants to do or, like, figuring out whatever's happening in her life, it's not a happy ending to get back to her boyfriend.
So you think that the show was actually, like, this ending was pessimistic about all these characters, and that they still, like, they're choosing the wrong solution.
Yeah, or they're choosing, I don't know if it's the wrong solution, but it's
the typical one.
Yeah, the typical solution, instead of, like, reading these pairing offs as, like, a good thing, it's kind of sad that Marnie and Hannah aren't friends. As per, like, they could have helped each other through these really hard times. Instead, they have to go back to these guys that they don't necessarily, we're not sure they actually want to be with. Marnie, because, anyway, and Hannah, because, like, we didn't really get very much inclination that she actually wanted to be with Adam.
Not at
other
all,
than
yeah.
that he was there and, like, came running and apparently, like, really loves her.
And did the romantic thing.
Exactly.
Did the gesture.
And I'm, of course, basing it off of the, mostly, most of this understanding of the finale off of the whole season of Marnie and Hannah, their issues together, and that kind of being the core thing.
Which was, like, the greater narrative.
Exactly, rather than, like, the narrative of lost love and breakups, because it didn't really focus on that so much as their breakup of friendship. And the only line in her book.
Yeah. That's interesting, because, like, I understand your reading, definitely, and I, like, maybe just need to go back and rewatch it, because I agree that where the characters ended up, like, is very sad to think about closely, but I, like, do you think that the show is also saying that it was sad? Like, do you think that was the perspective of girls, that these characters were doing something that we should be kind of alarmed about, or do you think we should have thought it was romantic and wonderful?
I think it's open to interpretation. I think Lena Dunham is, like, so smart and super duper feminist and, like, very conscious of this kind of how much focus the show has on female friendship and not on dating. I think kind of lends itself to that reading. I think it's open enough for the viewers who are more like, oh my god, Hannah and Adam need to be together. They're, like, Carrie and Big. I kind of, I mean, maybe we'll see in the next season, kind of undermines that storyline. That's, a commentary on, like, Sex in the City of, like, you know, you just have to get Mr. Big and you're happy.
Yeah.
Or those romantic comedies that end like that. Because it's not the ending of the show.
Yeah.
It's another season.
It'd be the best if the next season opened with, like, actually the same scene, like, 2 seconds later, and her still being like, I have to write this book, like, just, like, immediately. Just, like, absolutely.
Oh, you didn't help me solve anything.
Yeah, she's like, so do you have any good ideas for this book, Adam? And he's like, no, that's my Adam.
It was really good.
That would be the best. I would love that.
Yeah, so that was my takes. And also, I think the mental illness was really interesting. That's, I don't know. We should probably move on to the next.
Yeah, we have, like, 8 more things to get to. Okay, well, did you want to talk? I didn't know about this, the girls' porn parody.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I only know about it. I don't know if it's out or if it is coming out, but I saw on Lena Dunham's Twitter that it's happening, and then she listed, like, 4 or 5 reasons why she was really unhappy with it and, like, how she felt gross about it. And one is because, like, the depiction of sex in the show is to totally undermine porn, you know, to be totally realistic and, like, female perspective and just so anti-porn. And I think it's really interesting, her take on it. So go check out her Twitter.
It's about it. At Lena Dunham. I would actually, it's not on our list, but, like, we were talking about before, and I think that we should just briefly plug how great Amy Schumer's show is.
Oh, also. Yeah, we should talk about Amy Schumer's show. This is a great segue. Speaking of porn and POV and female perspective.
Yeah, female perspective and female perspective in comedy. Like, I would say that, like, Inside Amy Schumer is, like, the girls of current sketch comedy, like,
totally.
It's like unrelentingly female perspective and female experience, but in 2-minute sketches, which also happen to be very funny.
Yeah, and Kate, and there's super interesting gender swap that is usually not very interesting. But the two examples that Kate and I were talking about before were McNutties, which is like the male
Hooters,
which is just funny and on this on point.
Yeah,
you know, of having the like fat, ugly, sad guy have to go up and feel good about himself because he's dancing on a table. I think is really awesome, funny and smart.
I also loved how absurd they got with the idea of objectification because like testicles are the worst. Yeah, and objectifying testicles is so funny.
Yeah,
just like a close up of like dumb balls. And you're like, oh yeah, like objectifying anything is the worst. This is a sack of flesh. Like, no, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, and I was saying to Kate before, I think the woman's POV porn on the first skit of the fourth episode is the most insightful thing I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure. And it's just a woman. We all know POV porn, which is like the dude holds a camera and like points it at his dick.
And there's a girl there.
But the women's version, which is just like her knees up against her chest and then like the headboard and the pillow.
Yeah.
And just like the bottom of his chin as he comes. Like, yeah, like it's just so great.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, it's not the same for us. Whoa.
Kate just has to close her door and make weird noises.
The cat can't even get out, like, the door's fully closed on the other side.
Oh, is it? I thought it was open a little bit, so that was my bad for freaking out.
Anyway, my indoor cat is safe and not on the balcony. Listeners, I hope you're all very pleased.
There's a cat that lives next door to my grandparents' condo in Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
And it fell, they're on the 8th floor. And this cat was also on the 8th floor. I'm really going to tell you
guys. The 31st.
It was actually on the 9th floor. But I was just going to say, they live next door, but kind of above, but diagonal. So,
that's really important.
So, on the 9th floor, the cat fell off the balcony, or jumped off, and lived.
Cats are crazy.
9th floor.
Okay, never mind. We'll talk about it afterwards. I have a crazy statistic for you.
So I think, great show. Amy Schumer's great. Check it out.
We should do a close reading of all of her sketches, because her stuff is...
After the season's done, we'll definitely do it.
Her stuff is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
The next thing on our list is The Great Gatsby. I saw it, I didn't like it.
I haven't seen it, so I don't really have any thoughts. Other than, obviously, Gatsby should be black.
Obviously, Gatsby should be black.
And Daisy should be passing.
And
Will is the narrator?
Nick Carraway.
Nick should be gay.
Nick Carraway absolutely should be gay. There's there's 1 second in the book where he, like, is really drunken in his underwear next to a dude.
And then kind of dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, and like, just ellipses.
Super great.
Yeah, it's the best thing. And I thought if any adaptation would pay attention to that, it would be Baz Luhrmann's.
Like, yeah.
Even just have a weird hallucinatory moment where it's implied. No, nothing there. Spoilers for the end of The Great Gatsby. The movie.
Oh, is it different from the book?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me.
It's the worst, because Nick Carraway in this is Holden Caulfield and institutionalized and writing his memoirs because he's remembering everyone.
He's institutionalized?
For morbid alcoholism.
Amazing.
The movie is, like, utterly garbage. Occasionally, when he's, like, and of course when he's writing this, people are reading it, like, this is great American literature. Well done, Nick Carraway, author of this book. And so there's, like, lots of him writing, and then the text actually appears on screen, so those, like, iconic sentences that are in the prose but weren't dialogue, you still get them in this because they're physically on the screen.
I actually heard really good things about The Great Gatsby. You're the only person I've heard that says bad things, but that sounds so stupid.
It was aggressively stupid. It was as though it was trying to be stupid. But then at the end, once he has penned his memoir, it's on the table, and it's called Gatsby by Nick Carraway, and he has a pen, and he looks at it, pauses, and writes The Great on top in pen. And it's like, I laughed out loud to the degree that I think I spat on the person in the row in front of me. The characters were, like, aligned with the book, and the book, I think,
except
is fascinating.
Except for that, they're not the right sexual orientation or color
race,
of skin.
Or race. But in terms of, like, the depth that were provided, it's the same, and I don't think that can ever be a criticism of The Great Gatsby, because that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
But, like, if we can have lent me 4 minutes for review, the movie's terrible.
I want to address, yes. So, Nick Carraway's sexual orientation, obviously we're taking it from a line in the book.
Yeah.
And in terms of race, I think Gatsby is black and Daisy is passing. There's this point where Daisy's husband is like, and you're Norwegian, and you're Norwegian, and then kind of pauses when he gets to Daisy. Anyway, so it's a deep reading of it.
Yeah.
And it's accurate.
It's very interesting. Like, The Great Gatsby as about race is the best idea.
It's the best because, like, it's all about American culture and how is this book that's so smart not addressing race?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is.
Oh,
it's a way that you have to look at it a little bit more and read it through that lens.
And, oh, yeah. And
it addresses literally everything about America.
Yeah.
Like, the crossing from, like, east to west.
Mm-hmm. And the idea of not spelling that out would be, like, a very Fitzgerald thing to do.
Yeah, totally.
A very Fitzgerald thing to do.
That should be the title of this podcast.
Yeah, that opinion I'm allowed to have. Like, really? Dumb party line I just said. So the next thing on our list is Star Trek. Which you texted me, or right before you went in, I was like, just tell me how Benedict Cumberbatch is. And you texted me afterwards, you're like, super sexy! He looked great.
He did look great.
He looked awesome.
I loved his hair, and he definitely, I guess, put on weight for this mm-hmm. role.
He was a little less angular than usual.
Yeah, looking buffer.
Yeah, look. Remember that time he was one hand wielding a like machine gun that he also used as a melee weapon?
Yeah, I mean it's surprising because he can do such things like Sherlock and be this like. I don't find Sherlock sexy.
No, he's not. He's like this near the cervix sociopath, and his hair's the worst.
His hair is the worst. But to come from that and then be like a very good action.
Yeah.
Action star.
A totally believable action.
Yeah, I mean, his mouth opened, his jaw opened a little much for me.
Sure.
Like, vertically, when he was like, con, you know. Yeah, you podcast listeners can't
spoilers.
See it.
but her mouth
oh
open.
My god, yeah, spoilers.
Spoilers,
he's con.
Spoilers, he's con Verbatch.
Someone Thank told god. Me that it was like, obviously he was con. And I was like, I was so surprised.
I was super convinced he wasn't, because they didn't, like, I think the publicity team did a great job.
Me
everyone's
too.
Like, he's definitely con. And then they were like, no, it's just go John Harrison. I was like, probably, they're not lying to me. I was so trusting of that. And then, like in the scene where I'm like, oh, this is obviously con. Even then, I was like, oh, wow.
I wonder, I read some things about the whitewashing of con.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is interesting.
I found it interesting as well, yeah, because what was the actor's nationality? He was Hispanic? Sikh.
I don't know if the actor
oh, the character
was, but the
is Sikh, and then I think the actor was Hispanic. I think is the crazy thing about it.
I mean, that's exactly like it would be.
Yeah. Well, I guess because I don't have any connection to the original series, but the thing is I don't picture Khan, the original Khan, and I'm not sure if many do as anything other than like a space villain.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely Sikh. But it doesn't even make sense, really, of why he would be.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not like those were the politics of the character.
Yeah. Or even probably the politics of the time that it was made.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I even know, but...
I saw it.
Whoever hates Sikhs.
Yeah. No, I know. They're awesome. They carry swords.
Yeah, they have,
shit.
Like, a really nice religion.
Yeah. And, like, a great aesthetic.
Yeah. So... I mean, are we being more racist?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I'm, like, okay, just great. Dismissing an entire race based on how pretty they look in their outfits.
Anyway, he was great. I didn't understand. I mean, a lot of things didn't necessarily make sense. I was like, why could Spock fight Khan so effectively?
Oh, he had the Vulcan... Oh, we're bad nerds. The pinch. The Vulcan nerve pinch thing, which just debilitates people. That's just, like, a Vulcan thing.
I know,
thing.
But he was punching him.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, Kirk couldn't even...
Kirk punched... Oh, but wasn't Spock's punches... Didn't they not subdue him either? And then Uhura came with, like, a weapon that subdued him? Isn't that how it went down?
No, they had a long fight on the top of the ship.
I thought that the ultimate ending of that fight was because of technology. But I might be misremembering.
Anyway, so let's talk about, like, the feminist politics of it.
Very interesting, because the writer of the film, and I believe the director, both apologized for the moment where that character is gratuitously scantily clad.
Oh my god, thank god.
Yeah. I was like, it was the dumbest thing.
It was so dumb. Yeah. And I was like, I was literally like, ugh. She's not even a love interest. You know what I mean? There's like no reason for it to happen.
Yeah, and Spock's just there being a terrible human being. Or, well, sorry, Kirk is just there being a terrible person, like, eye-raping this woman. He's like, don't do this. And he's like,
I mean, I don't want to blame the woman, but, like, what is she doing? Yeah. Why is she getting in her underwear in the first place?
Yeah, is there not a partition?
Yeah. Of you're just trusting this guy who's, like, a known romancer. To, like,
maybe, the only people we've seen Kirk make out with have been, like, that green chick and then these two tailed twins. So maybe
he just talks big.
Yeah, or maybe she's just like, oh, he's not into humans. Yeah.
I guess another thing that's interesting about the gender politics of it is very homosocial. This one, because it's mostly about Spock and Kirk's friendship and, you know, crying about that.
Oh, that's the romance
and
in the movie.
Uhura is just, like, not in it. She was, I think, like, a more critical character last one.
Yeah.
And this one, she's just kind of like, I'm mad at Spock. And, like, that's it.
In this one, as well as the first one, like, the fact that she's a communications officer was, like, handy. Yeah. Which is, like, I guess good that her utility as a character was used in the way it should be used in both times. Where she's like, actually, I speak that language, and then communicates.
But I think she had more to do with the plot last time.
She didn't have a lot to do in this that wasn't boyfriendy, or boyfriend-girlfriendy stuff, which is too bad.
And it wasn't even fleshed out. Yeah. It was just, like, her saying that she is mad. Like, we don't even really get to see their dynamic together.
Yeah,
we just get to hear about it.
They don't really have any scenes one-on-one together, because Kirk is always there to be their third. No, they have a very much, like, this movie as, like, as many, like, homosocial readings of Shakespeare have, where there's, like, the true romance is the man, the two male characters, and then there's the woman they're getting in the way.
Yeah.
She's like, Ophelia or Cleopatra. Like, there's always, my favorite one ever was God getting in the way between, no, Eve getting in the way between Adam and God was a hilarious one I read once. But yeah, she was just kind of there to be.
Yeah. And I'm all about homosocial things. But I think, like, you don't have to dismiss the female.
Yeah, there's a way to, yeah, I agree. But yeah, that movie definitely was, well, I really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, me too.
And I do wish that they'd given Uhura more to do, just because also I like looking at Zoe Saldana, because she's amazing looking.
And I think that she did a really good job, unless I'm totally misremembering the first one, because I haven't seen it since it was in theaters. But she was kind of like a strong character, but not in a way of like, I'm a super strong woman character. She was assertive and she was well developed. Like, she still had flaws.
Yeah.
But she was assertive. And so I thought that she was a good character as well. And just to have her sidelined as, like, talking about her boyfriend just kind of sucks.
Yeah, she had less to be competent at in this one, which is too bad.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think it's, I don't know. I think it's a step in the right direction. If I can go back a second, that, like, the fact that there was outcry about the gratuity in this film, that was actually met with, like, dialogue, was very interesting to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a neat thing about our generation, and a neat thing about Twitter, and the idea of direct communication with the people who create the massive pop culture that we consume.
Yeah.
Is that you can get responses like that. But, I mean, I guess we'll see if the next one. Did you? Oh, wait. Okay. I sent you that gif of Chesty Cumberbatch that a friend sent to me. And that was from a deleted scene where Cumberbatch was gratuitously nude.
Yeah! I was like, why did that happen? Did he delete it?
I know, and I was, it's just, like, the worst thing. Like, I would have no objections to the female gratuitous nudity, because I am everyone. I am, like, exactly the problem, as I've said before. Where I'm like, oh yeah, it's equally balanced by, like, Cumberchest, so, like, that's okay. Yeah. But, yeah, the terrible thing, of course, about that argument being that if there's an exchange, then sexism is okay.
Yeah.
Like, objectification is fine as long as it's on both sides.
I would argue that Cumberbatch was more, not that I saw the deleted scene.
No, but the gif is just, I think the gif is more.
Yeah, I think it's probably more to do with the plot anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a bigger character that, like, makes more sense. And he's, like, what, getting out of the shower or something?
He's just sad in a shower. just having a sad shower.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just makes more sense.
Yeah, it was more of a character moment, yeah. Is the thing. It was actually, like,
yeah, and we're just taking it on as a sexy Cumberbatch moment, whereas, yeah. Like, woman in underwear is just sexy moment.
Yeah. I agree. The next thing on our list, I like this, like, very, very, very transparent method of structuring the episode, where I don't pretend there's segues. Like, next topic!
Yeah.
Podcast.
And it's totally random.
Yeah, this order is just, like, the way we recall things. The next one on your list is Tomb Raider, but we can also loop in, you played Bioshock Infinite, so if you have any thoughts about Elizabeth as a character as well.
I have a lot of thoughts about Bioshock Infinite, but I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Not for you, and also not for listeners, because unlike Tomb Raider, like, the plot is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the plot of Tomb Raider. I just mean, like, it's really important. I was going to bring Bioshock today, but I forgot it. But it's, Bioshock Infinite is really important that you don't spoil. Mm-hmm. But I do have thoughts about it. But I'm going to talk about just Tomb Raider, because it's not important if I'm not even going to say anything that spoils anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I have a lot of thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm.
First, oh my god, what is first?
How'd she look, Kara?
She looked, you know, her tits are everywhere.
Mm-hmm. They're smaller than they were in other versions.
Yeah, but they're still prominent. Yeah. Anyway, but not a huge problem. I think it's interesting, the dynamics of having a female protagonist, but the game is still clearly aimed and made for men.
Like, they know a male is playing this female character.
Yeah, and I think they employ that in a very interesting way. Obviously, it's third person,
mm-hmm.
And you can't play as a first person. Mm-hmm. Part of that is, like, the objectification of Lara Lara Croft as a sexual object, which is interesting because she's both such sexual object and person.
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting dynamic. But the way of the game distances you from her is mm-hmm. really interesting. Like, when you're at a save point or a pause or whatever, it's like, you can up Lara's skills by going here.
And not your.
Yeah, which almost every other game with a guy protagonist is you can up your skills by going to the camp or something.
That's fascinating.
And that's a very interesting distinction there, and that really stuck out at me. And I think it was the CEO of whatever company made the game, or maybe it was someone who worked on Lara Croft, but they had some really terrible tweets about it.
Oh, that could, yeah, they were.
I don't know if you read about it, but it was like, people who play Tomb Raider don't have an identification with Lara, they want to protect her. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, you can't really see that in the game design, but they said that, and they said one other thing, which I'm totally forgetting everything today. But I think those two comments were really interesting. And I think that player identification is very interesting.
I think that the idea that, because, like, we've spoken about before that, like, I'm incapable of not misusing pronouns when I'm talking about characters. I've played, like, I'm always the character I'm playing, including if it's, like, a pixel or a orc or whatever.
When I think, like, for very narrative games, when I think the character is making a really stupid decision, like, at the beginning of Bioshock Infinite, it becomes he.
Yeah.
And when it's good, I'm Booker. Like, me. Yeah, exactly.
Booker! And then Kara.
Yeah. So I don't always have that,
That's
direct identification.
That's very interesting. Like, I wonder if that was just a matter of them. I wonder if that was a debate they had, like, the idea of covering their tracks in a way that, so that they could never be supposed or mistaken to be, like, guys, you're being this girl. Like, guys, you're a girl now. That's very interesting.
But, yeah, it is that kind of cross of, like, I think that the developers think that guys don't want to play as women.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is necessarily true. I don't think that guys even have the chance to play as women, really.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in these extremely narrative games.
Yeah,
you don't have a choice.
Exactly, like being, like, forced into a female protagonist.
Yeah.
Like,
where they think that guys won't play it, but guys have always played Tomb Raider, and I don't think it's just because Lara Croft is sexy.
Well, no, I mean, you're playing an Indiana Jones adventure. Like,
yeah.
It's,
And to the point about the game, I think the game is actually really good.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how good it was. It is like a first-person shooter, which is interesting.
But a third-person shooter.
Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
You're still, like, behind her. And her character development's pretty good. I think there's something, I was listening to a podcast on the Indoor Kids about, I think, Far Cry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one with the woman developer, writer, and...
No, that's Uncharted.
Uncharted.
Yeah.
It's Uncharted. Of, like...
Which is the best.
Gameplay is so... No matter the narrative, it's so based in violence and mm-hmm. first-person shooters. Like, you just go to an island and kill everybody because that is the game mechanics.
Yeah.
And there's not really a way around it.
Yeah.
Really comes into play with Tomb Raider because, like, there is some problem-solving. It's not as problem-solving as previous Tomb Raider games.
There's puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, not very much so.
Sure.
You can go into the tombs if you want... you don't really get very much out of them. The main story is really the only thing that's important. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, but by the end, she's just, like, killed a whole island of mm-hmm. people. And you're like, you know, it's relying a lot on this one mechanism.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's necessarily a fault of this game in particular. I think it's a fault of gaming in general.
Yeah.
That's, like, there's not... There are games that do other things, mm-hmm. but these... heavy narrative games rely so much on just killing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this amazing, it is totally like the Hunger Games meets Lost, like the first season of Lost.
Okay.
It's exactly that, and the story is very, like, it's
kind of
great.
Cool.
There's this one part, I think it's a bit later in the game, where... it's just a big forest, and you have to stealthily sneak around and kill people. But it's just, and it's exactly the Hunger Games, and I loved it more than anything in the world.
That
and for
so
some reason,
fun.
That doesn't sound great, but it's amazing. So I liked it. Interesting gender dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Very
She's
good.
She's tough, but it's also her origin story, you know. So,
oh, it's like a first-time
yeah.
thing? That's
yes.
cool.
And she saves the woman, you know, damsel in distress, whatever.
What do they talk about? Is it boys?
She carries the woman, which I think is such an awesome image.
That's awesome. In,
of, like,
in
you
like,
know,
baby
yeah,
style? Or?
That cradle of,
ooh.
Like, you know, how guys rescue women and just pick them up, of that. And I'm like, that's just funny. You know, it's just a funny commentary of
that's
that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I want to draw that.
Oh, yeah, do it. I mean, you'll want to draw Lara. I mean, as I texted you before, her voice is ridiculous, but good and effective. And also, I want to mention, oh, we still have two more awesome things to talk about, but I also want to mention that she actually, like, feels pain
mm-hmm.
and feels sadness,
mm.
and there's, like, emotions that I think are very effective and visceral.
Yeah.
You know, when she falls, she's, like, in pain. And when she first has to kill someone, it's, like, a hard thing to do. And I think
that's fascinating.
I think that's really interesting. and that's all I want to say about Tomb Raider, although I have much more to talk about.
Yeah. No, when they were talking about Uncharted, that's a thing that I, just, like, very briefly, it's a very huge hurdle for games, because if you made this game about not killing, then it would be a stealth game, and it would be a completely different genre
yeah.
from what the game needs to be.
Yeah.
And, no, that's fascinating, because, like, yeah, the games they're talking about Uncharted are, like, a series that's one of my favorites, but it is unbelievable how many people are killed by this, like, nice guy you like a lot. And
yeah.
It, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Next point.
Yes, next on the list is Elementary.
Our next point. We could have done a good segue from Sherlock if we'd planned this.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It's not like organic segues don't exist in this list. And then we could have gone from Elementary to Con and then to Doctor. Like, there's
well,
ways
I also
to
love
done.
It's like two TV shows, two movies, a video game, and then back to two TV shows.
And then
shows.
Just like, yeah, now we had our nice video game break. You may recall, loyal listeners, when we talked about the first two episodes of Elementary several years ago, decades ago now. Carrie, you're still watching Elementary.
Yes, I stopped after the podcast, mm-hmm. because as you remember, none of us really liked it.
We were all just lukewarm on it.
Yeah. And then I started again, maybe a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of just stuck with it as just an easy... I find procedurals really comforting, as
yeah.
I think most of the North America does.
But,
and
oh, yeah.
Being so popular, they're literally everything that's on TV
yeah,
is a procedural.
And The Good Wife isn't on, so we don't have
yeah.
The Good Wife to
exactly.
procedure us through our lives.
So I continued watching it, and it got better and better and as it went. And then the finale happened, and it blew my mind. I was like, and I texted Kate the whole thing, so she was not going to be surprised, even though she hasn't seen it. It's amazing. So, Marjorie from Game of Thrones ends
yep.
up being, oh my god.
Irene Adler,
who you think died as, like, the origin story of current Sherlock at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And
like
that's his revenge story.
Yeah.
But it turns out she's alive, and Moriarty sends him to this house that she's in. I'm going to tell you it in detail.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Spoilers for the season finale of season one of Elementary.
Yes. And Sherlock goes to the house, and it's this creepy, awesome scene of, like, footsteps and weird music, and you see paintings, and then you see the back of a woman's head. And he says, Irene. Just like that. And...
Irene!
So
that was like Johnny
Irish.
Lee Miller.
And Marjorie Tyrell turns around, but blonde, and is so beautiful. And that's Irene. Okay. And then the next episode... I'm sorry to be telling you this in detail, of shitty detail. But it was just so impressive. So the next episode, Irene and... Oh my god, this cat.
My cat's having a psychotic break right now. Just allow that to be your background.
That's the noise,
to usher
in
you
case
in.
You listeners were wondering. And so Irene and Sherlock are going to run away together. But then Sherlock notices that there's a mole missing on her back. And she was supposed to be in captivity. Like, she wasn't allowed out of this house. There was a man controlling her. For the past few years, or
so
a year,
so weird
or
that she got elective surgery.
So weird
surgery.
That she got elective surgery to take away this mole.
Was it feminist? Her elective surgery.
No, yeah. I mean, it's not plastic surgery. Mole removal. I think it was, like, you know, preventative. I guess we could have talked about Angelina Jolie and her...
Oh, yeah, that would have been great, anyway.
Especially with Tomb Raider.
Shit.
Anyway, back to... So, turns out, she, Irene Adler, is not... an American Irene Adler, but Moriarty.
Moriarty!
And this is really amazing. I thought, because, first of all, shocking.
Yeah.
I love
good
the...
Good twist.
Great twist. But also, the whole show, beginning shtick, was that Joan is not John Watson. And so this role reversal is the gender swap is
yeah.
continuing to other characters in more surprising ways.
Yeah.
And Moriarty, as a woman... is amazing. Marjorie Tyrell has such a huge crush on her.
Yeah, you really do.
I really do. I was in love with her as Irene, and now also as Moriarty. And her as Moriarty, it's like, you never see characters like that. You never see super smart, uncaring characters that are just as smart as, like, the damaged protagonist. Do you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a really great way of saying it, because you see super smart women, but they're usually, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're usually mentally ill in some way,
yeah.
like on Firefly or in Dollhouse.
Yeah, they're more
sorry, bless me.
More visually broken, like more immediately,
yeah.
like
yeah.
like incapable of interacting with society.
Yeah, and she isn't.
Yeah,
you know, she's a manipulator. She has this huge system, as we all know. Moriarty has a huge system of criminals working
mm-hmm.
underneath them, and so she really is a mastermind behind it, and she really owns it. And is amazing.
That's, I love about it that they, like, the gender swap as being a thing they're sticking with
mm-hmm.
is amazing to me.
And it was so surprising.
I'm interested in what will happen with, like, the Watson-Adlerarty dynamic. I mean, like, I hated Joan Watson's, like, I didn't like Lucy Liu's portrayal,
yeah.
but maybe it got better.
It did get better. She's still a little, like, lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's just kind of boring. But it is nice to see something with... no sexual tension.
Yeah, that would be great.
although I totally want Lucy Liu and Marjorie Tyrell to get it on.
Oh, that'd be the best.
Yeah,
oh,
the best.
That'd be anyway, so good.
So that's me take. I totally recommend it. Totally recommend watching at least the last two episodes. and hopefully she continues, not as a regular, but sometimes on the show.
Yeah, a special guest
special
star.
Guest every once in a while.
I would, yeah, I'd be very interested to see what they do with the idea of a, like, opposite gendered arch nemesis combo. Does that ever happen?
I love it. I think it's great. I mean, the finale ended where Sherlock obviously won.
Yeah.
But it was because of Joan. Like, it was Joan's idea, ooh, Joan's solving of it, and so then he names a bee after her.
Oh, I love that. That's lovely.
Anyway, so it's really interesting. Okay, Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. So, for again, full disclosure, like, I stopped watching after, I think, the first or second episode with Clara, because I just didn't care about the show anymore, and I found it a strain to watch. I will catch up. Like, I recently watched the whole fourth season of Community, because I can't reject shows I cared about. But I didn't watch. But anyway, what I mostly wanted to address, unless you have thoughts about
Clara. I have thoughts about it.
Cool. But
let me get into it.
Yeah, yeah, go.
Or do what do you want to talk about the possibility? Let's talk about that after.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so I really liked the Christmas special.
Yeah,
me
too.
And I was actually really looking forward to Clara as a character. We talked about her being Osmond Oswald and kind of an undermining of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl trope. And then I think the Christmas episode was just great. You know, she was an interesting, assertive character.
And she had a good mystery.
And she had a good mystery, and that was really captivating. And I was kind of, I thought that throughout the season she was going to keep dying and keep being different characters.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you get the same old shit of Doctor Who. You get a woman that's set in present-day London, who's, you know, young 20s, who's feisty, like literally every single Doctor Who companion is the descriptor feisty.
Yep.
And she doesn't die at the end of every episode.
That was the best. That was the only reason she mattered. She like existed as this weird amorphous, exactly, or not amorphous, but like the opposite of a fixed point in space. Like,
and
she,
exactly. And like, yeah, what's so, it's exactly the same thing that literally every new companion has,
mm-hmm,
of that wonderment. And she's offering the Doctor caring. You know, it's always the women, like, he needs a companion because he needs a woman to teach him how to care.
Yeah.
And that's literally their role, and that's exactly what keeps happening, and it just gets worse. Do you mind if I spoil? You know what happens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to spoil the ending. Is, like, the reason why she was two separate characters before, that were still her, is because she jumps into, like, a, I don't want to go into the details of it, because, you know,
because of Dr. Nonsense, Cooey, probably.
Yeah. She jumps into, like, let's say a time rift and goes throughout the Doctor's history, helping him save the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she literally sacrifices herself and her future to help this guy that she's known for, like, six episodes. And it's just, like, so annoying that these women of Doctor Who keep sacrificing themselves,
mm-hmm,
and ruining their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, going to different dimensions, like, yeah, Rose. Or traveling the globe and teaching people how to pray, like Martha.
Or
forgetting
having
their whole,
yeah,
like, history, like Donna.
Yeah, just having, like, just not, yeah, having, yeah, all of their newfound self-confidence
going into
illiterate
a scary hotel, you know, and when we're,
yeah, like, ending up in the 50s, Amy.
Yeah. And, like, we're supposed to see Oswin as, that's not her name, Clara.
Yeah.
Oswald as, doing a great thing by jumping in and killing herself and,
yeah,
pushing herself across time just to save the Doctor. And,
yeah,
it's just, like, not happy. It's not a happy thing. He obviously goes in and saves the day and saves her at the end, so we're still going to get Clara without the interesting, like, across time storyline.
Yeah.
Because that's over, I guess. So, yeah, it sucks. She's just doing the same old shit.
Yeah, and the trope of, like, someone sacrificing themselves, like, someone is a Doctor Who mainstay, but one that I think has been overplayed,
yeah,
as well. Like, I could do without any more Daleks, and I could do without any more, like, meaningful self-sacrifice.
Yeah. It was just a really poorly written season on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Reverted back to a lot of things that we've already seen in Doctor Who instead of trying to do something new and innovative, which I think they tried to do more with Amy.
Yeah.
The first two seasons, I think.
Those two Moffat seasons were so strong, and this one just fell apart.
And I hope it will be better. I don't think that the reunion show, the 50th anniversary show, I mean, is going to be good. I think it's going to be terrible.
I think it's going to be gimmicky.
Yeah, it's going to be super gimmicky, and it's... I don't know. But on the other hand, I really liked the Christmas episodes, which are usually more... They're supposed to be more family-oriented,
yeah.
But they actually turn out usually really good.
Yeah, that's
except
true.
For the one about Mother Earth.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible. And actually, like, Voyage of the Damned wasn't very good.
I actually only... I haven't watched very many of them. I just mean two of
the
past three.
But the two of the Moffat ones were so
exactly,
good,
they were really, really good.
But, I mean, the news...
There's another Doctor.
Yeah,
that's
so
happened.
Matt Smith
was the
quit.
Silliest... What?
Oh, sorry, that, yeah. So, yeah, there was a Doctor in between 8 and 9, right?
Yeah, but they don't count him.
Yeah.
Because he's bad.
I don't hate it as a hook.
I mean, I don't hate it, but you didn't see it, and the way that it was introduced was totally ridiculous.
It'd be pretty cool if he ran into, like, his arch nemesis for the season was, like, the 8.5.
Yeah, it would be cool.
Didn't do it like that.
Nope.
Sucks. And then,
in fact, there was, like, a freeze frame and then text that came up as, this person as the Doctor.
Ah!
Yeah, it was pretty nuts.
The Great Doctor. He just writes it.
So what were you saying? Matt Smith quit?
Matt Smith is not on Doctor Who anymore.
What?
You didn't know this
news. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, Matt Smith, this last episode is going to be the Christmas special after the anniversary special.
Aww.
So, the news is that Doctor Who's getting a new Doctor.
I wonder if it's that Doctor. Probably not.
So the discourse around this has been a lot of people writing articles about, and kind of just like all the conversations that I've sort of encountered that are people saying that the next Doctor should be, and at this point pretty much has to be, either a person of color, is how I'll awkwardly phrase it.
How have they not already I'm sorry that I didn't let you finish.
That's okay. Have they not already cast it? Yeah, it's crazy.
Because they've already been shooting that show, that episode. Already shot it.
The anniversary special, yes. And then there's another episode, which they haven't...
Oh, and Matt Smith's still going to be on.
Yeah. So his last episode's going to be the Christmas special that comes after the anniversary
special. Right, okay. That's sad. I'm sad to see him go. Oh, also, River Song. That was a really disappointing ending for her.
She just said goodbye? What happened?
Yeah.
Was it the first time they met?
No, it wasn't.
That's dumb.
It's so stupid. I mean, that's another thing about the show, of just, like, River Song was such an interesting character, an interesting love interest of that kind of, like, traveling apart, and, you know, the first time we saw River Song was so amazing.
Yeah.
The silence in the library, and, mm-hmm. and whatever the next episode was called.
The Forest of the Dam.
And, like, to have her whole life literally be being, she's raised to love the Doctor, is fucked up.
Yeah.
And she was in this episode, but mostly just as, like, a nothing. As just, like, a sad goodbye to wrap up her character when, like, it shouldn't be wrapped up in that way because it was stupid. Anyway, Matt Smith is leaving.
No, what's interesting about the River Song thing, too, is they had an intrinsic narrative into that that would have been very interesting and fulfilling. Like,
yeah, but instead they're like, let's start her life and raise her towards loving the Doctor.
It could have been so good. Like, you just have...
She's an archaeologist, not because she likes archaeology, but because she wants to find the Doctor all the time. It's so annoying that her whole life is about it.
Wow, that's really undermining a lot of interesting things about... Wow, good job, Moffat. I hope that's because all your creative energy is going into Sherlock. That's the only word. I will totally forgive this shitty season of Doctor Who if Sherlock's just, like, the best.
I like Doctor Who more than Sherlock.
You do. And probably even if Sherlock's bad, I'll think it's great.
Yeah, because that's what it is already. Okay, so Matt Smith's leaving. It's going to be either a person of color.
A person of color.
Which is just a way of saying not white.
Or a woman, is what everyone's saying.
Yeah, and as I said to you earlier, it's obviously not going to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. Because they would have to totally remake the show into something different. As I said when talking about Elementary, like, you never see characters that are like the Doctor that are women.
Mm-hmm.
You never see someone who is super smart and capable and, you know, that genius trope without being so clearly debilitatingly insane.
Yeah.
You know, the doctor, of course, is, like, quirky insane, but the women are always, like, to a fault insane and have to be visibly so. Like, it's not something that you can learn over time. It's, like, they right our way have something wrong with them. So, it's not going to happen.
It would just be Manic Pixie Dream Doctor. They would just definitely have that.
Yeah, and it just wouldn't be interesting. I think, but also, like, what will their companions be? Will it be a woman? Will it be a dude? If it's a woman taking a guy on a journey, totally have to restructure the tone of the show and how to relate to people. I mean, that's really unheard of. It would be very hard to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to see it happen.
Yeah, like, the thing is, I'm still at the phase with it because there's no news whatsoever where I really am enjoying speculating about what they could do with it.
Yeah.
And, like, I would still love I would love it if it was the same sort of slight romantic tension dynamic, because it would also imply that the Doctor, like, has this queerness that's, like, more clearly defined, that this person that, like, exists in a liminal space with gender, like, also has a liminal sexuality in that way.
But it would be saying, as a man, he likes women, as a woman, he likes men.
Yeah, I think that
that it is a little, like, heteronormative.
I guess, but I think that that's also, like, not viewing the character in the scale of the, like, the whole of the show, and I think that that, like, is something that wouldn't be completely discarded by the viewer.
I mean, I think it would be amazing if it was a woman, and had a female child.
I know, and then
still had that kind of flirty relationship.
Yeah. Or if you had, like, I would do another, like, Rory and Amy knockoff and have a female doctor and have, like, a weird threesome sexual tension. Totally. It would all be great. I think anything with a female doctor would be very interesting.
But I'm not convinced that it could be done. I mean, I don't think that it will be done because I don't think that anyone would give it the chance to be done, because they think that they would have to restructure a lot of the show and the expectations, and just general, if we've never seen a female character like that before, I don't think that there's much chance of it happening.
I'm going to call it now that Doctor Who is always going to be 6 years behind American presidents, and we're going to get a half-black Doctor.
Good, yeah.
And, like, I don't know, I guess whatever a Secretary of State is in Doctor Who. I guess the companion.
Well, I mean, probably River Song. Yeah. Because she's, you know, at least she started out to be a very strong person that helps out the Doctor.
So maybe that will be a lady again. Yeah. You know?
I mean, I think it's going to be, like, the vote in that black men get it first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good.
Thank you.
Also good.
Which is nothing wrong with it. I'm glad black people have the vote.
I don't think it was implied you didn't think that, but I love that you worried about it.
I'm so happy that black people get to vote.
Yeah, I mean, black people and women, that's great. And even though none of us can be the doctor.
Yeah. I mean, a black woman doctor, let's be real.
Britain would shut the fuck down.
The best. Get Martha.
Yeah, I was gonna say, name a single black English actress who's not Martha Jones.
You know, I think other than Toronto.
Oh, they definitely exist. I just don't know any.
Oh, right. Oh my god, there's so many, probably.
Right, I just can't name any. I'm sure it's just because we're not English.
And also because everything that we see from Britain is like Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously there's no black people on it. Although there's going to be next season.
LL Cool J or someone? Do you
remember that? There was like the jazz bar that one someone went to.
Oh, I stopped watching Downton Abbey.
Well, good. It's not very good.
No, I mean, why would I watch that? Yeah, I guess that's kind of everything we have on our bullet-pointed list of conversation topics.
Like, we could have gone so much more in-depth to every single thing, but I hope that you all enjoyed the light touching upon each of these things.
Basically just summarizing the plots
of the finale of Elementary.
Oh, good. Well, I guess if you guys sound off or let us know what you would like to hear more about, we can definitely expand on our thoughts on a lot of these.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that I can get to Tomb Raider and Bioshock Infinite soon.
I would love to do a full episode about Bioshock Infinite.
Well, yeah.
I'm not sure that there's enough to talk about gender-wise. I think we could do a good 20 minutes, but there's a lot to talk about race-wise, violence-wise, gameplay, physics, magic. I love it.
You loved it. I played only up until the point where I didn't throw that baseball at those black people.
Yes, it's interesting that you can choose to do it, and that's another thing that we should bring up.
I've had, I obviously chose not to, and my friends were, like, a little bit disappointed because they hate black people. No, because, like, obviously they made the same choice, and they wanted to see what the game would do.
Yeah.
And I've heard, like, three or four other people who have had similar things. Were like, I played the first 20 minutes. My friends were disappointed. I didn't hit the black people with a baseball. I was like, yeah, like...
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you did? You were playing with a friend, and they just did that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, people would.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because people are racist.
I probably wouldn't even go back and do it just to try it. I would just watch a YouTube video. I think it would freak me out too much to do it.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll save that for the Bioshock Infinite episode, which is going to happen, as well as soon as the Game of Thrones season wraps up, we're going to talk all about that, because we have a lot to say, especially with George R. R. Martin saying he's a feminist at heart, which we'll get into the meaning of what means at heart versus not at heart.
Yeah, versus in practice.
But there has been a lot of gender talk, feminist talk on Game of Thrones in the show itself. So we'll save that.
So we'll have a Game of Thrones. Okay, what else do we have coming up?
Well, if you have any suggestions, we'd love to hear it.
On?
Right now.
Tell us now! at a website of onezone.com. And
you can follow us on Twitter at Tweets of OneZone, or you can follow me, which you should do, because I tweet much more often than Tweets of OneZone, at Kara Stone's Diary.
On Twitter. And until next time, guys, I don't know, I would have any, normally I, like, would try and make a joke about the thing we, like, talked about, but there's 9,000 things, so I guess continue consuming media to excess, y'all.
Yeah.
Until next time. I'm just hitting buttons, I don't know how to make it stop recording.